This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 19th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. I'm up. I am relatively alert, and I'm ready to go.
Relatively.
Oh, relatively alert, man. You know, this is when you're eligible for Social Security, we're sort of on a different sort of standards.
Standards, all right. Standards. That's. Or maybe
context.
Maybe sitting down instead of standing.
Ooh, all right. Oh, I see. That was almost a joke. That's good.
Almost. All right, people, protect others, wear a mask, and let's defeat this coronavirus that we have threatening our sports landscape next year as well. So Let's do what we can to keep this thing from spreading. And thanks to everyone on the front lines doing their part. We appreciate that. And, you know, keep up the battle. I keep saying this every week, and I'm probably going to get tired after a while, but we cannot get tired. We got to keep fighting because this is not going away.
Yeah, don't give up. I mean, the best thing is we all stay healthy. I mean, regardless this or that, who says this, who says that, stay healthy, number one.
That's number one.
Your neighbors. Love your neighbors and protect
That's important too. Yep. And friends and family. I mean, I've heard stories about people passing it among friends and family. So we've got to take care of everybody. All right. So on this week's show, we are featuring you again, the listeners. We don't have an interview. So you guys are out there front and center. It would be nice to have an MP3 with your voices to go with it. So we will ask for some of those at the end of the show again. But after we do that, we're going to take a look at the league races, and we've got a couple other notes. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So I was talking with Jim before we actually went live here or went to open the mics up for recording. And we were talking about the fact that we just have not been able to get interviews. I called out teams the last time this happened. I called out the Tigers. I called out the Giants. I called out the Swallows. And we still don't have any interviews from any of those teams, and that's just the way it looks like it's going to go. And looks like the Japan series is going to start, and we might not even get a chance to talk to any of the Giants the entire season, and that would just be wrong. But I'm still trying. I will not be denied easily. They're going to have to tell me no. So, and I'm working hard for you guys, but mostly I'm working hard just because we want to know what's going on with that team.
Sure.
It's about to win a pennant, and like I said, we haven't talked to anybody on the team the whole year, and I just really am disappointed in all the PR departments, and I know they must be getting a lot of requests from all the reporters, since not every news outlet can go, not every TV or radio outlet can get in. However, as you said the last time we had this, they are really taking advantage of this situation and limiting the contact between the fans and the players, because this is how you guys get a better perspective and learn about the scope of what goes on in a team is through these guys' interviews.
There's always been, you know, one of the first things that the current general manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters, Hiroshi Yoshimura, told me back in the days when he was working for the Pacific League in the Pacific League office, and I was just 15, 16, 17 years ago, and I was just writing my analytic guides to Japanese baseball, and he was one of my early readers. He said, first thing you have to learn, he said, maybe the first thing you have to learn about dealing with Japanese baseball teams is that the role of the public relations officer is to keep people away.
Secret Service, huh?
They are essentially gatekeepers rather than facilitators. And although I think those were more cynical times, and I think it was more true in the 80s than it was in the 90s, and then more true in the 90s than it was in the decade after. I've always found that the more that there's always a relation, a slight, there's often a tense relationship between the media and the PR, in the sense that bad press will kill the PR guy's relationship with the trust level with the team executives. And so there's always a little suspicion, you know, about reporters, especially I think reporters who are not the beat reporters. Not the guys who you can, you know, if you're a beat reporter and you write a lot of negative stuff, they can give, you know, they can basically not kill your access, but give you the cold shoulder.
Sure.
Right. But if you're one of the guys who, you know, like us, who just shows up at the game and can go to different teams, there's nothing they can do about it. And I think that's part of it. But we've had wonderful PR guys, and we've had other ones who will try to limit the access to the non-beat reporters. I've seen that quite a lot. And this is a case of, you know, when I say this interview is for the podcast, I can't say it's for my day job. When I say it's for the podcast, I think the red flags go up.
You know, we've exhausted ourselves. I know I've been trying to jump through all the hoops and hatches and trap doors to get interviews, and I've gone to the players, and you know, we have contacts with a lot of players, but I had one player recently tell me that he could do it, but it had to be on a day off. And then when I suggested a day off, he said, no, can't do it that day, we're traveling. And I'm like, okay, well, I see what we're going through here. So I just, you know, kind of put the phone down at that point. So we are not getting easy access this year, but that's what happens in the coronavirus.
Yeah. I don't want to cast aspersions on the individual
PR. Cast a couple of aspersions, just a couple.
No, I don't. I don't want to, because I don't know the whole story.
Okay.
And I often snipe at people. I mean, you know, verbally, who spout off without knowing the whole story. And so I don't want to do that. But I have noticed that MLB teams have been the same this year. Teams normally that would say, yeah, go ahead. And I've contacted in the past, just called people who work for MLB teams and can we interview you? Non-scout people. Can we interview you? And they say, yeah. But now the word is, if you want to talk to me, you got to call the team first. I'm going, whoa.
What? Yeah.
And I think the reason for this is people are losing their jobs in America. People with long tenured front office and scouts and minor league coaches are losing their jobs.
Yeah, just nobody, like a lot of other industries. Yeah,
nobody
and a lot
wants
of other countries.
A guy who broke team rules to do an interview.
Yep.
And I think, although in Japan we're not at the same stage, I think there are people who, I think people know the job security is not going to be what it once was next year.
Yeah.
And that PR people are under more pressure than normal. So, so you guys, if you are listening, and I have not been the nicest about this in the past, but I certainly understand if it's hard for you. And that means that you guys who've been bending over backwards to help us get interviews, I appreciate you guys all the more.
Yep. Yeah. And I hope the listeners do as well. So with that, let's go to fielding questions. All right. So you guys, the listeners, are the stars. We have three questions lined up for tonight. The first one comes from Scott in Searcy, Arkansas, via email. And he says, I really enjoy the podcast. I was an exchange student in Japan for 2 summers in the mid-90s and have followed NPB ever since. OPS would probably be the best or the most meaningful measure for this question, but which Japanese hitters have performed best against foreign pitchers this season? I would also love to hear about some Japanese players expected to be posted in MLB next season. And Scott said he used to live in Japan and is an he's a sports information director at a university in Arkansas. So awesome. Jim.
Go Hogs, perhaps.
No, it's not. No, it's Harding University.
Okay. Shows you that's my knowledge of American college sports pretty much in a nutshell or a nutcase. Okay. I don't really, well, first of all, yeah, I could ostensibly give you this data, you know, who hits, I mean, I have the basic raw information, but it's not, for this year, I can't really give you an answer. I don't have it processed. In the past I could, I don't really know. I mean, John, it's going to give you some opinions and I'm probably going to agree with them. I don't, I also know that individual matchups are very unstable data. Essentially because you don't, you know, I know, for example, there are sort of famous matchups in Japan that are, I know, like Nobuhiro Matsuda of the SoftBank Hawks has beaten Ken Togame of the Lions like a drum over his career. But other than that, I couldn't really tell you. I mean, and even that, that we're talking about something that's like 60 or 70 plate appearances, which is really not a very stable sample. So my general opinion is personal individual matchups are close to meaningless, but I'm going to let John carry on.
Well, I actually have a similar opinion, but it's not so, let's say, analytical. I remember when I was watching baseball here in Japan in the mid-90s as well. I don't know. Scott didn't say where he was. So let's just assume it was a big city that had a team. I just don't feel like the numbers of Japanese, certain Japanese players versus foreign pitchers in MPB would be useful information because the import pitchers here are more often than not they're much different from the guys in the States, whether it's command, velocity, having pinpoint control, your secondary stuff being good. I think they're just different. And part of the reason, especially with the guys in the 90s, I mean, gosh, I can't remember if I tried to think of a lot of guys who came from the States and pitched well here, who pitched in the major league. Gosh, I can't even think of
a lot. Most of the guys were minor. I mean, they were fringe major leaguers. Bill Gullickson, of course, that was the 80s.
I was going to say Gullickson is the one who stands out in my mind. And wasn't it Bros? Bros?
Terry Bros.
Terry Bros. Yeah, he pitched in the States.
I don't know how long. But yeah, it's been very, very rare that we've had a guy with a long major league pitching career.
A standout, you know, major league pitcher come over here and then pitch well here too. So I just think they're different. So I'm not sure that those numbers, if we, for instance, we could come up with a star player here in Japan who has really good numbers against foreign pitchers, that that's going to translate to something that's useful for evaluators to make a decision whether to sign a guy or not. Or maybe for fans to say, hey, this particular hitter has had some success against foreign pitchers, so he's not afraid. Well, he's not afraid because he sees one a week, or maybe in this day and age, maybe he sees one a day, but for maybe not that many at bats. But none of those guys is named, Clayton Kershaw.
Well, there are some sort of prototypical, there are pitchers who are sort of like prototypical major league types. Randy Messenger comes to mind. Chris Johnson comes to mind.
And you're talking about style more so than production.
I'm talking more about style, the way they pitch, the
approach.
Kind of,
you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, and an approach and the pitch selection. So they're more typical, but I think those guys are here not because they didn't have the quality to pitch in the major leagues, but because they were not established in the major leagues.
Yeah, well, notice I didn't say they were inferior. I just said they're different. I said they're just different and it could be like you said that they were never really given the opportunity because somebody, and this is what Tyrone Woods, a former Dragons slugger, said to me a long time ago. He says, look, guys get labeled, especially when you start to approach the magic age of 26, you know, when you go from prospect to has been or never was in some people's eyes.
Yeah, if you're 27 and you're in the minors, you're pretty much somebody else. You want, you know, you're an emergency player.
Right, right. You are the definition of replacement guy who's brought up to fill in for injured player X. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just not sure that I don't think it's that simple. Let's look at the Japanese players and see how they did.
It is a good it is a good question because I think it's worth noting. And
yeah, it would be good if you had that data, let's say over 10 to 20 years, and you could say, okay, these guys are the guys who decided they were going to go and try to play in the United States, and this is how they did against foreign pitchers here, and this is how they did.
Might be fun. One of the things that I like about Japan in terms of pitchers and hitters is that there's a especially if you're a pitcher in Japan, you get to face all kinds of different hitters. You get to face these, I mean, Japanese baseball right now is I think quite a lot more varied than MLB.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, you have guys who are really trying to just really hit the ball. I mean, who are just trying to launch the ball a lot. There's some of those. There are elite level guys. There are guys with elite level plate discipline. There are guys. There are all kinds of different styles in Japan. I mean, there's a preponderance of slap hitters, yes, but there's more variety. I think you see, or at least the DNA is a different mix than it is in the majors, where right now it's probably half the guys are just trying to launch the ball, launch every ball into the seats.
Right. Yes. It's been seen a lot of that.
Right. And the skills that are tuned here, I don't, you know, the tuned and practiced are different. So I think it's a great, that's one reason I think Japanese baseball is a great learning opportunity, maybe a better learning opportunity than the U.S. minors. And another one is that because Japanese baseball is not as deep as Major League Baseball talent-wise,
mm-hmm.
because the... You know, there are guys who have everyday jobs in Japan who are really would be borderline AAA guys in America. I mean, it used to be they would be borderline AA guys, but I think that those days are over.
Mm. Not for every team and not for...
Yeah, there's a few guys. I mean, a few kids, I would suppose. Yes. But the point being that if you have a player who's confident and is not going to be awed by failure, and you make a commitment to them, even if they're really young, even if they're, say, an 18-year-old Shohei Ohtani who's going to hit 230 as an 18-year-old and, you know, with an ERA close to 5, the fact that you're competing against all these different varieties of hitters and pitchers, and the fact that you're competing against all of these quality levels, you know, there's going to be some guys, I mean, Matt Winters told me one of the first times we had a long chat, said, you know, I'd have games where I just hope that Hideo Nomo got out of the game early so I didn't strike out 4 times.
Right. I remember you saying that. Well, so, you know, and like, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, yeah, I wish it were that simple that there was something that these evaluators and these scouts could plug in as a formula and then say, okay, this guy is probably a shoe-in for Major League Baseball success because he has done well against this. And, you know, there's something else that I would like to see. I'd like to see if there's some data, if you could ever put it together, of some of the players who have gone over to the States and what they did against some of the elite pitchers in Japan, like all the elite pitchers in Japan before they went over. How did they hit against the top performers here? And then I think that data would be more useful. And even that, I don't think is basically going to give you an idea how a player might perform in the States, because, again, it's just different.
You know,
approach is different.
Well, speaking of which, and this is only slightly related to that. Only slightly related,
so not that far a tangent. Okay, go ahead.
No, not terribly, but we're talking about the same kind of, the same area, about different qualities of, you know, sort of different tranches or levels of performance ability.
Sure.
I remember when Vladimir Valentin hit 60 home runs. You know, here was this huge following in the States saying, wow, here's a guy who didn't do this and he's doing that. But what I found was, and also another, that was one part of the discussion, but another part of the discussion was that Vladimir Valentin hit for a good average, and he hadn't been hitting for a good average prior to 2013 when he hit the 60 home runs. He had a really good average that year, and he was making good contact. And I remember doing a sort of a little study. I went like, how is this guy hit against the best pitchers in Japan? Okay. So I basically took guys who had better than average ERAs and mm-hmm. you know, how did Vladimir Valentin hit against them? Okay. He was basically hitting 400 against the guys with below average ERAs, and he was hitting 250 against the guys who had the best ERAs in Japan.
Okay, so you've done something similar to that.
Yeah, Bill James has suggested that there's no difference, you know, that you couldn't take, you can't get fat, you know, hitting off the weak pitchers. But scouts have told me different, and I also think that it's harder in America to say that because the gap between the best regular pitcher and the worst regular pitcher, we're not talking mm-hmm. about the guy who's called up from AAA to make a start today,
okay,
is narrower than the gap in Japan.
Probably, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it might be a more valid comparison for Japan than it is the States. I'm sorry, that doesn't really apply to the question, but it is an interesting question, and I want to thank you, Scott, for asking it.
Yes, Scott. And also the second part of your question, we will address with another question that came after yours. So let's move along. The second question is from Ian in Texas, near Houston. And he also sent an email, and he said, sounds like he's a frustrated Tigers fan, but he says, seeing the ever-increasing gap between the Giants and Tigers this season, what specifically does Hanshin need to do to bring a better fight to the Giants next season? And he says, always enjoying the shows each week. So thank you very much, Ian. And I'll go first on this one. Specifically, when you throw that in, that qualifier, it defeats my snarkasm because, and I did say snarkasm, that's a John original. I was going to say they need to play better and win more games. But when you say specifically, I think, you know, without knowing the inner workings of Hanshin and what they strategized this year and what they tried to do, I can only point at the things that probably a lot of other people saw. And that is the fact that they played really poor defensively. And that really has to improve. I looked up, you know, and I don't like to go simply on errors because I think that's a lazy way of looking at it. Because defense is more than errors. It's, you know, the plays you make, it's getting in the right positions. It's hitting the cutoff man. It's making good relay throws. It's a lot more than just not catching the ball sometimes or having it tick off your glove or dropping it when you're hastily trying to throw the ball to first to catch a fast runner and they score it an error. So, but they have made a lot of errors. I think that they are, they've been credited with the most errors this season in NPB. So that is something they're going to have to deal with. But, you know, they could pitch better in the rotation, I think. They lost some games early on this season when they just weren't competitive early in games because of their rotation. I think they could run the bases better for sure. Some of that is speed. Some of that is they have they had a few older players who were in the lineup who kind of cluttered the bases when they were out there, and they didn't get that extra base when defensively, because they didn't have a lot of good arms in the outfield, they gave up a lot of bases. I remember specifically a game against the Dragons where I saw a player rounding third base just when the left, I'm not sure who was playing left field. I think it was Jerry Sands that night, but I saw Koji Chikamoto as well throw, just have a very poor throw to the plate to try to get runners out. It's just, you know, there's a lot of things defensively.
I probably notice a third of the Tigers games,
mm-hmm.
if that many, a quarter maybe, or a fifth. And it was my impression that Chikamoto's, who at times, you know, one of the things I like about the Tigers is I think they are, if not always the smartest base running team, perhaps the most alert base running team, at least okay. some of the players. And particularly I'm talking about Chikamoto and I'm talking about the shortstop who's injured.
Oh yeah. So yeah.
See, Kinami and my favorite, Yuchiro Umeno, the catcher. Those three are three of my favorite base runners in Japan. And I'm not about raw speed. I'm just talking about the ability to see what's going on in the field and take advantage of it on the bases. But my impression of Chikamoto's defense is that it hasn't been as good as it was last year.
Mm.
You know, it just sort of like little things. It's almost like, oh gosh, why do I keep putting myself into this position? But it's almost like he's got friends that play for the Oryx Buffaloes who are telling him, look, you're the regular. Don't worry about defense.
You catch it. You don't catch it. Just get ahead.
Attention. We don't.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay, Oryx guys, I am just kidding. But, you know, that's the old Oryx, not you guys.
Right. And so, yeah, that part, they steal enough bases. Obviously, they play in that park. They're going to be hampered in terms of hitting home runs anyway. And they've hit enough.
They got a good power. I mean, with Jerry Sands and Justin Bour and Yusuke, the marvelous Yusuke Oyama, they've certainly got more power than any Tigers team has had in years.
Yeah. Yeah, so they just have to.
Tightening up the defense has to be a major concern.
Yeah, not getting to balls, not throwing runners now out, and not allowing those extra bases on the opposite side that end up being runs somehow when there's a wild pitch or a ground out or something. Those things add up over the course of a season. So I would try to upgrade the outfield defense, get another arm in the rotation that's reliable.
You know who?
And they're right there.
I mean, I love Akihiro Yano, but I think it's so hard to be a manager of the Hanshin Tigers because there's so every mistake. You know, I've probably seen a dozen stories this year in the press about how the Tigers, you know, lost a game because of mistakes. And I look and I go, well, this mistake didn't cost them. And this mistake didn't cost them. You know, and it'd be like the runner, the runner on third is caught off. There's runners on second and third on a ground ball. And the runner on third is put out between third and home.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead runner ends up at third and the batter ends up at second. And they're going, this is another mistake. I says, yeah, it's a mistake, but it was a mistake that cost nothing. And so, and whenever they put out one of these, oh, the Tigers are filled with all these mistakes. I'm looking at them and half of them are just piling on. You know, the guy had a story and so he added a bunch of fluff to it.
Okay.
But that's how it is. And if you're a Tigers player, you kind of have to live with that. And I think one of the things I like about Akihiro Yano is he has this sort of attitude with the media when they talk mm-hmm. about the team's faults and said, okay, yeah, I hear you. Next question. We'll deal with it. Like, it's not your issue to deal with it. It's my issue to deal with it. And I'm going to deal with it. You know, we'll take care of it. Now go mind your own business. And I think if Yano is ever not the manager, you know who would be the absolute best man, the absolute best manager and the absolute best manager to create the most uproar in the Tigers media community would be Mr. Positive Alex Ramirez.
Uh-huh.
Because he would be the guy who would say, look, the media. He's like, take those newspapers, throw them in the rubbish. We don't care what the media says. We're going to be positive, right, and we're going to play, and we're going to have a good time because we're the Hanshin Tigers, you know. And he would do that. And, of course, I maybe it's against the rules to, since the Tigers are, you know, they have that weird relationship with the local media. So, But he would be, I think that's the hardest thing to do, is to depressurize the Hanshin Tigers. Cause I think they just have some really wonderful players. I think they've got more, they've got all these guys who just sort of like, but part of being a Hanshin Tigers is walking on eggshells, it seems.
Yep. Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Ian. And the last question is, came to us via Twitter from Painapples.
Wow. I think I was eating some of those last week.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever come across those, and I'll make sure that I stay away from them. So Painapple says, who are some of the notable names who could potentially file for domestic/international free agency at the end of the year? Hashtag high heat. So this ties in with Scott's question about possible players who might be posted. So in terms of posted, I actually got some help from our man behind the RSS feed, Michael Westbay, and I looked up the list of free agents, and let's just say it's an unimpressive list in terms of big league prospects for the immediate futures, meaning, you know, this after this season and next season. There's really no player who looks like an MLB starter to me out there, a frontline guy who is going to gain his international free agency. And in terms of guys, I haven't even heard of anybody clamoring saying, I want to be posted. Have you?
Sure.
Who are the guys you've heard of?
The two guys?
Recently?
The two guys who play for the same team.
Yeah, it's who?
Kohei Arihara and Haruki Nishikawa.
Okay, Nishikawa, yeah, again, I was thinking guys who are going to be MLB starters. Now, Nishikawa,
okay,
I don't
well, I'm just, a starter. Okay. Yeah, yeah, he would be a starter. Would be a back-of-the-rotation guy if he ever decides.
Right, he but that, I mean, essentially that's a starting position, so I'll give you that one. So, I hadn't heard about Arihara so much. I remember Nishikawa, but I didn't see Kensuke Tanaka with the Fighters. I didn't see him going to the States.
The Fighters didn't see it either. That was like the Fighters guys told my Fighters people told me that, you know, he saw Darvish going and he's going like, oh man, I could go too. And so one day he just sort of dropped the bomb on him. I'm going to the States. And, you know, he was a free agent, but he's like, I'm going to the States. I'm like, yeah. What?
To do what? And then, yeah, same for Hiroyuki Nakajima. I thought that kind of came out of nowhere when he talked about it. Nobuhiro Matsuda, the SoftBank, when he said he wanted to go. In fact, I remember you scolding me about Matsuda because I said, throughout the notion that he was just using that as leverage and that he really had no intention of going. And then
I think he did, but I think the other forces were at work.
Well, I mean, and eventually it came back to the money, and you said, well, if you don't want to go to the States for that money, it means you don't want to go to the States. Not that
I
you
think,
don't want to.
I think he did want to go to the States. Okay. This is just me. I think he did want to go to the States, but he also underestimated how much connection his wife is apparently a friend of his of this lawyer in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be mean, but his American agent was very upset to find out that his wife's friend was basically telling the San Diego Padres that he didn't want to go to America.
Okay.
And was sabotaging the negotiations on the other, you know, from this side. You know, the Padres had a guy in Fukuoka talking with her when essentially they were barred from doing so. You know, that's against the rules. They're not supposed to discuss player negotiations with anybody but a certified agent. Although, you know, that if you're not a certified, if you're not a, or I should say anybody but the player's designated agent. But so it was a very strange situation. My reading is this, that the money got so big that his wife pulled the plug on it. And also he was also in the same category with Ryosuke Kikuchi and Tori Tani. And that they decided, oh, I have to be faithful. Yeah, I don't know what gets into these because I have to be faithful to my team in Japan. I can't leave them in the lurch by waiting until January to see what the waters are in the free agent market.
Right, right.
And these guys are not.
Hashtag excuse.
Exactly. No, it's like the. I don't think it's an excuse, and people say it's an excuse to get a better salary, but I think it's more of these guys are exceedingly and unnecessarily loyal to teams who are not necessarily exceedingly or unnecessarily loyal to them.
Mm.
Especially in Toritani's case, since they wanted to retire him. They wanted to essentially bury him in his uniform.
Yeah, they wanted to put him out in the pasture. Yeah,
they did.
So, essentially, I think this question is more along the lines of, from Pineapples, of the lines of who do we see, you know, as the guys who could potentially go over soon. Okay. And so I think we're talking about the Kazuma Okamotos of the world and people, well, or players who are near the top and perhaps ready to go.
Yeah, I think we have to, in the free agents, no, I don't see. I know there's probably going to be some free agent who wants to go who we would never think of. But I think we have the two posted players we've mentioned, and I will mention two others.
Okay.
And I will say,
they better not be on my list because I was going to go first. But you're
go
going
ahead.
First.
You go ahead.
No, I defer. Go ahead.
But I don't know what your list is, so I don't want to step on your list.
go ahead. Okay, you give one, and then I'll give one.
We'll, okay, this is the one people tell me about, and I don't believe it, but I'm not buying it, but I'm also not discrediting it, because if he did want to go, he wouldn't tell anybody, and that's
okay.
Seiya Suzuki.
Seiya Suzuki, yeah, he's on my list, but further down, because he's still young.
Yeah, but there are people who are convinced that he's gonna be posted this year.
Oh, really? This year? Okay.
But I say that these are MLB people, and I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it because he hasn't said anything. But again, the typical pattern for players being posted is they raise their hand and say, "I want to be posted," and then the next year or the year after, the team says, okay, usually the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you got to say something. You gotta right. be the...
Typically, but one never knows. Okay.
All right. And so my guy was, since he's an eighth year guy, and the unfortunate thing is he has had a so-so season on the mound, but Yakult's Yasuhiro Ogawa.
Ah.
And I thought he would be one of those sneak attack guys who never says anything, and all of a sudden he wants to go. And part of it could be that he's just sick and tired of all the losing with the Swallows, and that his talents could best be used by a team that's competing and just get out of the situation that he's in. And the best thing to do would be to go to the States. So that's why I picked him.
I've had absolutely zero contact with him, so I don't have a good gauge on what kind of person he is. I wouldn't know.
Okay.
My other guy is Tomoyuki Sugano.
Huh. And I think you talked about that before, and that kind of makes sense. And he's almost ready to go, right?
He's going to be a domestic free agent. I think he's a domestic free agent this year.
Okay.
And he is in a position where, again, I have talked about it before and we don't know, but we've also had the Giants say we have to be considerate of the fact that he gave up a year of his professional baseball career to play for us.
Mm.
Now, that could mean a lot of things, but I will tell you that what people who know have told me, that the Giants Shun Yamaguchi, of course, they did reveal that he had a clause that required them to post him at a certain point.
Sure.
And that many people in the organization did not know that.
Huh.
That it is very possible these contract covenants that would include posting players, not of course, not everybody has them, and we don't know exactly who has them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not impossible that Sugano would have one, and it's also the fact that he has done his duty, and if he wins, you know, if he's another Sawamura Award, wins his third Sawamura Award in 4 years, and the Giants having agreed to post Shun Yamaguchi, that I think it would be very difficult for the if Sugano said, he does want to pitch in the major leagues. He has told me that. I said, when you're 34, you said, first chance I get, I want to go. And if he said, the Giants would be very hard pressed now to hold him back.
Okay. So, all right. And a couple guys I think have talent. I don't know what their interest level is. I'm sure there'd be limited interest on both parts in both of these players. Hotaka Yamakawa of the Lions, and he's in his seventh year, so he's getting close. So I could see that happening for him. And then Masataka Yoshida of the Oryx Buffaloes, who's in his fifth season, so he still has a while to go to build up that service time. But I could see interest in both those guys.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the Pacific League race. Now, the Eagles barely alive now. I think there's some defibrillator paddles that are out and people are yelling clear. So they got swept Fukuoka over the weekend. And so it's just a matter of time, I think, before we see officially the Marines and the Hawks are going to clinch playoff spots. You know, Rakuten started out the season so well and just kind of dropped off. And we saw injuries to guys like Jabari Blash and others. And then Hideto Asamura seemed to struggle between August and mid-September. You know, I'm going to proclaim time of death 10-18. I think they're done. Obviously, this was a big series just to maybe keep slight hopes alive. And they got swept, so we'll see you next year. Unfortunately, it's a COVID year. You know, if third place would be a valuable thing in a normal season, but this year it's really not. And I think I also like what the Lotte Marines have done. I had them. I think I predicted they would finish third. They're finishing. They're outdoing what I predicted. And I think I wanted to throw in the name, just to get his name in the conversation, because I think his work at the back of the bullpen has been invaluable for this team and has really turned it around, because there were a lot of close games that he came in and got saves. And that's Naoya Masuda, who leads NPB with 29 saves. And I just want to throw his name in there. I'm not saying that he should win it or he should even get any first place votes, but certainly he's been a real invaluable player for that team in a breakout season in which I don't think a lot of people expected very much from them.
No, I have no disagreement there. The Marines, they've had a couple of surprises, but I love a lot of the things that they've done, especially in terms of integrating the young guys into the team.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, okay, this guy's 24, this guy's 25, this guy's a rookie, you know. So there's all that going on. And then they've got Leonidas Martin. They lose Brandon Laird. And Leonidas Martin's going like, okay, 25 home runs, bam.
I can do that.
Yeah, exactly. And
I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, who's leading the league in outfield assists. And I'm pretty sure he's still at the top of the list for outfield assists. So he's doing that too.
He's definitely leading Japan and being hit by pitches.
Oh, well, yeah, that
I'm sure it pains him for me to say that.
You know, that really came out well. Yeah, I applaud you. You did well saying that. But yeah, I like what I not giving up on them. You know, I'm not burying the idea that they might still be able to win the pennant. But let's put it this way. The Hawks are starting to last time we talked, it was a really close race, and then all of a sudden it's 4.5 games.
Yeah. I think the coronavirus really hurt by, you know, robbing them of essentially their starting outfield.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've played well in spite of that, but it did hurt them. It did. And that's...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they lost today, so the gap is 5.5 games.
It
now.
Is, yeah. They're 5.5, and the Eagles are another 5.5 back. And then they've got a game on Monday, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, there are games today when we post the podcast. And one other thing I wanted to say, the Tuesday game and Tuesday's Lotte Marines game, they had a walk-off victory. And Seiya Chubbs Inoue, the heavy hitter for the Marines, he was brought to tears after his walk-off double in a 4-3.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tease him, and I, you know, I got to see his girth up close and personal in the 2019 camp when I went. I'm standing right next to him. I'm like, this guy's bigger than he is, than he looks on TV, and TV's supposed to add 10 pounds. And I think he even ate the 10 pounds that TV gave him. But
hashtag,
but I he's a nice guy, and he was brought to tears. And I always say, you know, I really jump on guys who, when they're crying and they have eye leakage for regular season.
You have done that, yes.
Yeah, yes. And but I just thought that was a real memorable moment. And he was even moved to tears in the hero interview afterward, you know, minutes after the game. You know, I wanted to tweet, I was, you know, unfortunately, I was chasing my kids around trying to get them to sleep. So
your kids were bringing tears to your eyes.
No, they were going to bring tears to their own damn eyes. But I wanted to tweet out, thank you, baseball, because that was just a really fun moment. And, you know, it was a warm and fuzzy moment for Lotte.
Yeah, he was having a terrible night, and I don't know if he had made an error on defense or something. I didn't see the game, but he, you know, he came out with a big hit at the end, and yeah. Well, that's
what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, put your heart out there.
Love it. It was nice. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and jump over to the Central League, and the Giants have a magic number of 7 as we speak here on Sunday night. So. This is clinch week, essentially, in the Central League. And for those of you who are asking, yes, this is going to be a chance to talk about the Dragons, because they had a really impressive run here in the Central League. And I think I said it during prediction shows or whatever, whenever we have talked about it. But I said any team that can put together a run can go from, you know, fourth place to second place or something like that. And that's exactly what the Dragons did. They won 7 games in a row. They got shut out today going for their 8th consecutive victory. But, you know, why talk about
that?
They
got shut out, but it was not a kind of very impressive shutout.
Yeah, they had 10 hits. I don't know how many walks, but they out-hit the Carp 10-5 and lost 5-0. It's amazing what you can do with double plays and not being able to execute. But, hey, why you want to talk about old stuff?
Indeed.
Zoilo Almonte, who, you know, you talked about the fact that this guy is productive. The only problem is he can't stay healthy, and he had a 21 game hitting streak, and then he got injured and he's deactivated, and streak intact. When he comes back, maybe he'll be able to pick it up again if he can make it back. Every team has fewer than 20 games to play, except for the Swallows. I think the Swallows, as of this moment, have 20 to play. So, you know, I don't think the pitching changed that much at all for the Dragons over this streak or anything. And they've kind of gotten hot toward the end of the season, which is good for them, because I had them finishing in second place, which they kind of climbed up to. I don't know if they'll be able to hold on to that spot, but, you know, they played the same strong defense. They pitched the way they've been pitching the whole time. They just started to get those hits that they hadn't been able to get earlier in the season. And they also have this remarkable streak. I didn't update it. I'm pretty sure it's 33 consecutive games won when they are leading after the 6th inning. And that's a streak that Shuhei Takahashi saved the other on Thursday night with a walk-off 3-run home run against Hanshin when Daisuke Subway actually allowed three runs in the eighth to blow it.
Yeah, so they blew the lead. It's all, you know, right. It's not quite like, and they also, yeah, they blew the lead. And so it's not like the bullpen saved them. It's like somebody else saved the bullpen.
Yeah, but that, I mean, it's about time, huh?
Yeah, you know, and actually, you know, when I was watching that game, I was thinking, wow, we're going to get to see the Tigers. We're going to get to see the Tigers bullpen due to the Dragons, what the Dragons bullpen have been doing to everybody else. And then, oh, I guess we're not.
Yeah.
But I have tons of respect for those three guys at the back. And I'll tell you, and we, John and I talked a lot about this because John is sort of like the, I don't want to say he's the Chunichi Dragons guru, but he cares more about the Dragons than most people I know. And
he has
a heightened sense of attention, you know, in regarding things Chunichi. So,
yeah, but if to be a guru, I'd have to be watching like every pitch of every game, which I'm not. I'm watching all the games, relatively.
Yeah,
but I'm watching all the games.
But we talked about, you know, here I was sort of a novice this year with the Dragons. I found them much more fun to watch this year for a variety of reasons. And so I was going, oh, who is this Hirota Fuku guy? And John said, oh, well, he doesn't pitch well working on 2 days rest. And I verified that.
He doesn't pitch well, but
moving along, he's gotten better.
He
has gotten better at it. So he's been fairly, resilient.
Yeah, but it wasn't 2 days rest. It was back-to-back days that he wasn't working.
No, I mean on back-to-back days. He was working on back-to-back days.
During the streak, he worked back-to-back-to-back days and did well.
Well, when he had a rest day, he was basically not walking anybody. That was kind of the big thing. So.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Interesting. I really have enjoyed watching the Dragons this year. And I think this is the first time I can say I've enjoyed watching the Dragons since Hiromitsu Ochai was the manager.
Yeah, and even those, that style of play was hard to watch in some respects. So well, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, true.
It is. It really is. So. All right, and to keep up the Central League theme going, Tomoyuki Sugano, who you mentioned earlier in the show, he lost 4-3 on Tuesday to Hiroshima at home, and there were a lot of circumstances in the game that ended up costing him the game because the Giants hit two solo home runs in the ninth inning to make it a close 4-3 score, but they weren't that close. That broke his winning streak of 13 consecutive winning decisions to start the season as the opening day starter. Now, that was hailed as a record, and I think I saw you either write a blog post about it or just tweet about it. Which one was it?
Well, I think you tweeted
a blog post.
Probably.
And saying, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. We all know that Masahiro Tanaka won 24 straight decisions in 2013 when he didn't lose a game and he had won 26 over two seasons, 26 consecutive decisions, and he just wasn't the opening day starter because I think of the WBC.
Well, John, I know you've pointed out that it's different being an opening day starter and I think there's something to that. You know, it's different being an opening day starter because you tend more often to face other opening day starters.
It can be, yes.
It can be. So I think at the beginning of the season, it makes a little bit of a difference. And, you know, to that, and Tanaka when he went 24-0 and, you know, and he had that streak of 28 consecutive regular season winning decisions going back to 2012.
It wasn't 26, it was 28.
It was 28.
Okay.
He finished the 2012 season 4-0.
Okay.
And he, he didn't start on opening day because he was coming back. He was still a little jet lag coming back from the WBC. So.
I remember going through his starts and saying, okay, these are the names of the pitchers he faced. And it wasn't that impressive a list of pitchers. However, I did make the point that, hey, you still got to go out and win the games.
It's still 24-0. And I mean, yeah, exactly. So my thing is Tomoyuki Sugano tied the record for a Giants pitcher. He tied the team record for a Giants pitcher from the start of the season, which was set in 1966 by Tsune Horiuchi, who is a rookie and who also didn't start on opening day. But yeah, I mean, it's 13-0 is really great, but trivializing it by making it a Japan record was the equivalent. I think I've mentioned this to my colleagues. It was the equivalent of saying that some Japanese sprinter's 1.2 second 100 meters in the Olympics is a Japanese Olympic record. Like, we should care. Oh, it's the fastest 100 meters ever run in the Olympics by a Japanese. Okay, it's not the Japanese record. It's not the Olympic record. It's not the world record. But it's a record. It's a Japan record. You know,
That's not a thing.
you know what it is a thing? And I was thinking about this, and I think the reason people think it's a thing is because in the news media, there is still to some... And I think with some degree of truth, there's the Giants sell, whether it's about, you know, pro Giants or anti Giants. Giants stuff still sells better than, say, Swallows stuff. People pay more attention. You know, something mm-hmm. happened to the Giants. I mean, when the gambling all happened, oh, I think it was bigger because it was the Giants. But so I think there's that. And so a lot of the papers cash in on it. I mean, the Japanese media is in some ways is, you know, it has its customs. You know, it's like, and one of the customs is when a guy qualifies to file for free agency at the end of the year, on a certain day, he'll amass enough service time during the year. And the reporters on that day will be notified. The league will send out a fax to all the news services, and all the reporters will gather around the player and say, "You've qualified for free agency. What do you want to do? Tell us about your future on May 12th. You know, and without failure,
look into our crystal ball. You know?
Yeah, it's like they only ask the question so that the guy can tell them, "I'm not interested in answering that question right now," but they all ask the question because it's obligatory.
Hmm.
And the thing about, you know, the editors have decided, you know, the flash quotes in the game. Every batter who drives in a run has a flash quote. It's like, it's just the way things are done in Japan. And one of the things is that if it's about the Giants, it's more news. It's, seems to be more newsworthy because that's what they do.
Right, right. So our buddy and Japan Times writer Jason Koskri, whom we've been trying to get on the show, Jason, come on, man.
I'm not going to criticize Jason.
I didn't criticize him. I just said, come on.
I'm not even going to suggest he could do more.
All right, so you got that going for you, Jason. So he wrote an excellent column about Yudai Ono of the Dragons and Sugano, and saying how Ono really has outpitched Sugano in the Sawamura Award categories or in that criteria. And so this will be an extremely compelling event when the old fogies sit around telling us why they chose who they chose and how they go about explaining based on what they said last year. And I hope Jason has his Japanese up good enough to challenge the old cronies when they sit down to give their spiel whenever that is, because everything's thrown off with the Corona situation anyway. So whenever that is, that might come in January for all we know.
Yeah. Well, when Chris Johnson didn't win, when Kenta Maeda won in 2016 and 2015 and Chris Johnson's record was more or less the same, except Chris Johnson had a better ERA and fewer strikeouts. Somebody said, "Are you dissing Chris Johnson because he's a foreigner?" One of the Japanese media asked that, but when somebody read the question in the stories, they said, "Jim, was that your question?"
Oh, gosh.
Getting to that, I commented that basically in Jason's story, if you haven't read it, read it.
Please do, yes.
The Saul Murrah Committee press conference is, it's very simple, actually. They basically, five or six guys in the committee, they basically say, here's our guy. You got questions? And so they'll generally then read off, each one of them will sort of make a few comments for the media. And it's over. And it's like over in 10 minutes if you don't challenge them. And generally, it's when you challenge them that they get into their sort of explanations for why they did and why they didn't.
You mean jibber jabber?
Yeah, it's
old man babble.
It can be pretty entertaining. And Jason put it really well. He said, you know, why when we were young, we used to be able to, and that, to be honest, doesn't always hold water. And I have a lot of the old game records and old stats, and I'm going, some of these guys actually did, but my point, you know, some of them were actually really amazing pitchers, but some of them, and they, I should say they were all amazing pitchers, but the context change.
Mm.
And if you look at, you know, they'll say, oh, I threw these, you know, somebody threw 20 complete games a year. And I'll say, yes, but in 1970, most of the complete, you know, the typical complete game was like 105 pitches, you know, but nobody talks about that. I mean, the context changes so much, but they tend to be rooted in the past. Not always. Some of the guys are very, very sharp, and some of the guys are very, very, I think, unwittingly humorous in my mind. In fact, one of my former editors in my day job used to say, do you wait every year just to get Choji Murata to say something that you can write a sidebar about? I did, I think, 2 years in a row, because he was a great pitcher, and I think he's just a wonderful guy, but he's one of those guys that just will say stuff that he just says stuff off the cuff sometimes. It's not really connected to reality.
Unwittingly amusing. I like that. All right. Well, we got that coming. Again, we don't know when that announcement is going to be.
I suspect it will be. It will be on the. If it holds to schedule, it will be on the 23rd of November.
I can't see that happening with the Japan series.
Well, it always happens on the first off day of the Japan series. So.
Okay, we'll see. All right, we've got some notes. One, it's the time of year where we get a slew of retirements, and they have been trickling in, and we haven't actually mentioned all of them. We have mentioned a few, but a couple that caught my eye recently included Rocket Boy.
One of the Rocket Boys, the other one's a coach. Now he's been retired for a while.
Well, the Rocket Boy who used to be the Yakult Swallows closer, and that's Ryota Igarashi, and he joins the notable list of retirees. I think we did talk about Kyuji Fujikawa. Yep. We've got Yoshiyuki Ishikawa, the Hiroshima Carp catcher, and Naoto Watanabe, a guy I really like because he's just a wonderful guy. He's that kind of player who's played on a bunch of teams, kind of a journeyman plug-in dude who does, you know, whatever you need, bunt here, play defense there, pinch run, get the water, mop the floors, turn the lights out.
Well, we also had the wonderful moment this year when Hideaki Wakui lost his no-hit bid.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, I wasn't really paying much attention, but just before I came out for the eighth inning, I believe he lost it in the eighth inning, just before I came out, and Nao-chan was there grinning at me. And I'm going like, what's your problem, dude? And he started laughing, and I started laughing, and I kind of lost my concentration, so it's all his fault. which is, if you've seen some of Hideaki Wakui's hero interviews, you'll know that that was about as good as it ever gets. He was getting used to being on the hero thing, and he was doing it really well for about three times, but he's out of practice now. And so he's standing there and going, but yeah, that was golden. That stretch in September when he was just on a red hot streak, he had these little quips ready and he was funny, and I'm going, Wakui funny, wow, what happened?
He's alive. Yeah, he's pretty much monotone and unemotional.
So Watanabe is going to be missed, and Yoti Garashi, one of the guys who would always always be very dear to me. Just a really, really nice guy.
Really a fun guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, never, you know, I've said dumb things to a lot of players, and sometimes
that goes without saying.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I say dumb things all the time is what I do. And I say dumb things to a lot of players, and because my Japanese is really lousy, a lot of them have taken it the wrong way. And I've had, Daisuke Motoki. I know he seems to have gotten over that. And Nobuhiko Matsunaka, I'm sure he'll get over it someday. But I said some of the dumbest things possible to Igarashi. I was kidding with him one day, and it was turned out to be really awkward. And he was like, "Don't worry about it."
That's good. That's nice. Yeah. All right. One other note, the amateur draft is in about a week. It's on October 26th, the Monday evening in Japan. And that's kind of unusual. It's not usually on Mondays, but this is a COVID era. So again, things are different. So that should be interesting, because I don't think that we know who the jewel of the draft is at the moment, or at least the everyday fan doesn't know so much. And I don't watch all that much high school baseball, so I don't know either. So it'll be interesting to see who goes where and what and how they discuss it on the show, because normally we have the summer tournament, high school tournament, the national tournament, and we get to see some of these players, or we get to hear about them, or somebody pulls up.
Yeah, we have the inner city corporate league tournament. We have college tournaments. We've got all
this. I'm talking about the high school. Yeah. I know that. Yeah, the other tournaments are going on, but
yeah, but there's lots of stuff going on this year without the high school players making. Certainly no high school player made a name for himself by throwing a Brazilian pitches,
right. And it's just different. It's just different. So, all right. And the last note is from Jim.
Yeah, we had this week, this past week, we had the latest salvo in the "Didn't you know Alex Ramirez won't be back next year" column. So this is another one. Last time actually was in September when he said that his one of his pitchers probably didn't know the hit and run sign. So they said, well, that's a sure sign that Alex Ramirez should be fired. And this latest one included a comment by a former Bay Stars player, which is almost a sure giveaway that somebody's looking for a coaching job when managers change. And he said, essentially that we have proof that Alex Ramirez is a poor manager. And the proof. I'll skip through the complicated analysis, but his proof is that the Bay Stars get on base and advance runners as well as the Giants, but they had scored through Pat last Sunday 26 fewer runs. And so I did an analysis of every Central League team since 2016, and my analysis is that there has been no manager in Japan who, over the past 5 years, no team in Japan over the past 5 years has been as good at getting more runs scored out of his overproducing, for being hyper efficient, than Ramirez's Bay Stars. So arguing that Ramirez is a bad manager because his team is less efficient at scoring runs this year than the Yomiuri Giants, given that their offenses are very similar, which they in fact are, which is unusual with these criticisms because usually the criticisms are bogus from the word go.
Mm-hmm.
Is essentially taking two guys who are longtime players and they're the same age and they play the same position and they play in the same parks. They're teammates, let's say. And one guy's a career 300 hitter, one guy's a career 260 hitter, but this year the career 300 hitter is batting 265 and the career 260 hitter is batting 270, and then deciding that because the guy is batting 270, he must be a better hitter. We know it because he's doing it. It's happening this year. Well, this year the Bay Stars offense is underperforming in terms of runs scored.
Okay.
But it's not the norm. It's just an abnormal year. Generally, Ramirez is better than anybody, except Tatsunori Hara, who he is exactly the same the last 2 years. They're both essentially 20 some plus runs more than expected.
So that's, yeah. I mean, certainly there are different probably ways to figure out things, but don't be lazy and just say, well, this team has X number of runs.
Well, don't be lazy and said the only, well, he said the only difference between the two teams is that one has a good manager and one has a bad manager.
In fact,
he said no one can argue with the fact that the manager is the difference, which is sort of like saying, I worked on Tuesday and it was raining and John worked on Wednesday and it wasn't raining. And therefore, John is the difference. John is the reason it rained, or I'm the reason it rained. You know, that's the, and no one can dispute that. And that was the level of logic that is used in these arguments.
No, there is no level of logic sometimes, just that this is what their opinion is.
Like I said, I was actually surprised by his analysis that the Giants offense and the Bay Stars offense were similar, because that was, even though he used batting average and home runs, they are very, very similar. They should have very, very similar numbers of runs scored, but the Giants have scored the 25 runs or so more.
Yep. All right. Oh, yeah. And I did want to point out that the Dragons had gotten into second place and they still have a minus run differential.
Yeah. I mean, again,
by a lot.
It's amazing.
Like, they're not,
it's amazing.
And they're not going to get into plus this season unless
The other thing is the Bay Stars, not only is their offense abysmally underperforming, and I don't think that's Alex Ramirez's fault, I think, but when I did the analysis of how much more how their offense has grown, I'm very impressed with the quality, the annual growth in that offense. Because when Alex Ramirez took over that team, that was a team that was very much a really poor offensive team, and they've become a good one.
So take that, Mr. Number Analysis. All right, Scott, Ian, and Painapples, thank you so much for the questions. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on the Facebook page. Leave us a comment there. MP3s, guys, if we can do this and hear your voices, it would be much nicer.
Yeah.
You can read Jim's blog at jballallen.com, and we've got games all week this week, so we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at jballallen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.